You know, how many of us, if we're really honest, would be willing to admit that we sometimes or often even feel that way? I mean, we feel like the walls are caving in. We often or, you know, even at times feel a sense of stress in our lives. Just out of curiosity, raise your hand if you feel that, yeah. Isn't that interesting? Look at all the hands around. You know, how many of us would say, you know, financially we feel, you know, financial tension, you know, probably all the time. I mean, multiple times throughout the year. This time of year especially just came off, you know, maybe summer vacation, spent more than we planned. School starting, you got textbook fees and clothes and shoes and iPads and shoes and holy cow, shoes are so much right now. I mean, we say occasionally or often we feel financial tension, just out of curiosity. Yeah, a bunch of us. I mean, I just would say I wish I had more time for the things that are really important to me, the things that matter the most in life, the people that are most important to me, and I just feel a tension all the time if I need to reinvest my time. Yeah. Like, there have been hands up all around here. See, we live in a culture that is constantly trying to push us to do more, to add more, to connect more, to, you know, add more to our play, to add more to our kids' lives, have our kids in more and more activities, and all of this leads to more and more stress. In fact, a few stats from the American Institute on Stress, which sounds, by the way, like a terrible place to work. I don't know who would want to do that. But nonetheless, they say 73% of people regularly experience psychological symptoms from stress. Furthermore, 77% regularly experience physical symptoms from stress. And then all of that adds up to $300 billion per year, the annual cost to employers in stress-related health care and missed work. And if you're in HR, you know all of those numbers. You live those numbers every single day. And so, you know, we struggle in our culture to live at a sustainable pace. And so over these next 4 weeks, we're going to look at the importance of margin, the importance of white space, which has nothing written on it. It's just space where there's no plans in our lives, because we need those moments to operate at maximum potential. And so big idea for this series, you make margin in your life and your life gets better. And guess what? You get better at life. That's what happens when we begin to make margin and we make white space in our lives. So, man, really excited to be with you this morning. My name's Kurt. If we haven't had a chance to meet, and if you're new today, welcome to Crosspoint. If you've been new over the last 3 or 4 weeks, we have not met because I've been on this thing called rest and study break, which the Crosspoint board requires me to take every summer, which it's, I twist my pinky finger to take 4 weeks off in a row. Nonetheless, it really gives me and my family a chance to disconnect from the normal routines of life. And I actually renamed that whole thing. It's no longer rest and study break, it's rest and creative hiatus. That's what we're going to call it now. That's what happens when you get margin. You get creative and you name things new names because you have space for creativity. So nonetheless, it's really beneficial for my family. It's good for you. It's good for Crosspoint. And my word, you guys heard some phenomenal speakers over the last 4 weeks, right? How about Brent and Michael and Devon? Yeah, let's give it up for those guys. And Josh last weekend, awesome, awesome series with Spark. Let me pray for us before we dive into this morning. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can come into this room and we can begin to explore things that are very countercultural. There's things that you call us to. Jesus, most of Jesus' ways of life are very countercultural, very counterintuitive to the way the rest of the world goes after things. And God, we want to implement those things in our life because we know that when we do, life goes to a different level. And so, God, I just pray that you'd help us to see things today, learn things today, see things that maybe we've never seen before. And, God, most importantly, that your spirit would move in our lives and we would be open to the things you want to do within us today, we pray. Wherever we are in our spiritual life, God, we just open ourselves up to you. We pray these things in your name and according to your character and identity, Jesus. Amen. Well, hey, really excited to dive into this today. And, again, big idea, when you make margin, your life gets better. And I think all of us want to say, yeah, I want life to get better. But guess what? You actually are better at life the more margin you have. Now, one of the cool things is Crosspoint's a place for people regardless of where we are in our spiritual journey. And so, you know, we have a lot of people here every week that are kind of new or exploring God. You know, the whole faith thing's new. And we have people here that are, you know, kind of pre-emergent in their faith, or people that just, you know, made faith commitments, to people who've been walking with Jesus for a number of years, even for many years. So, you know, Crosspoint's kind of a place for anybody. Oftentimes, when we begin to try to reconnect with God or engage with God for the first time, one of the barriers is we have a lot of spiritual baggage. And oftentimes, we've come somehow to the place where we see God not as some entity who wants to fill us up and actually give us more life, but we think of God as a God who wants to just stick a straw on us and like suck the life out of us. And so, I mean, it's kind of like if I'm already weighed down with the weights of life, and then I'm going to start to connect with this God who has this massive list of rules and all of these, you know, kind of religious obligations and marks that I've got to hit. It's like, no thanks. I'm not in for any of that. And yet, I want to be really honest right up front today. If that's the version of God that you've been sold at some point or another, you've been lied to. You've been lied to. Because the God that I see in the Bible and the God that I've come to know and experience and follow is very contrary to that. In fact, Jesus, take a look at Jesus. You know, he actually says the contrary in John 10. He says, there's a thief that comes. It's an intelligent darkness in the world. There's a thief that comes to steal, kill, and destroy. That comes to suck the life and suck the enjoyment of life out of your life. But Jesus says, I, though, have come that they, meaning you, may have, and what's the word he says right there? Life. And not just life, he says, I want you to have full life. I want you to have an abundant, a full life. And whenever I read that, I'm like, man, I want that. Sign me up for that. In fact, Julie and I, we're constantly looking for how can we have more and more of that in our lives. We want to suck up like every last drop of awesome in our lives. I mean, we, you know, if God has that there, we want to experience all that he has for us. And yet what we've discovered is we can't do that on our own. Because our kind of way of understanding that is that we think we've got to add more to our life. We've got to be doing more in our life. Jesus' way is actually very counterintuitive. Because see, you and I see, hey, we want to have more life, an abundant life. We think we have to produce more, do more, add more. Our kids need to be in more stuff. I mean, it's crazy what normal is these days, right? I mean, we think cramming more and more, you know, is gonna make life fuller. And our kids, I mean, our kids, for some of us, you know, they started school last week, or some of them are starting school this week, and they're going to be bringing homework home. And then on top of that, we're going to have them out 4 or 5, maybe 6 nights a week as elementary kids, you know, because we think we're chasing this elusive thing out there. And so we put them in all these activities. And so our schedules, I mean, the kids' schedules begin to impose on our lives, and we're stressed, and the kids are stressed. And if I were to like sit down and just have an eyeball-to-eyeball conversation with many of us and say something like, hey, how's life? And are you really enjoying life? You'd look at me and you'd be like, no. And I don't have time to talk about it because I've got to go. I don't have any time. Because it seems like the way to a productive life, the way to a full life, is to never stop producing, to always be adding. And yet, if you do a quick look on the Google machine, you just go Google this, and you'll find that research upon research, study after study, actually debunks that idea. In fact, have you ever heard of the 10,000-hour rule? Anybody ever heard of the 10,000-hour rule, out of curiosity? 10,000-hour rule was created out of a lot of research by a guy by the name of Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers. And he kind of discovered through research that the threshold to the exceptional, in whatever area you're pursuing, whether it's the arts, music, part of your career, you know, flying an airplane, whatever it is, playing the piano, the threshold for exceptional happens at 10,000 hours of practice. All right, doesn't matter what it is, 10,000 hours of whatever you want to become exceptional at, that's kind of the threshold. Which leads us to begin to think, I've got to always be on, always be adding, always be engaging. And yet, that's not the whole story. In fact, take a look at this article. It says, in Outliers, that's the book that Gladwell wrote, Malcolm Gladwell focuses on the number of hours exceptional performers must practice and says nothing about the fact that those students also slept an hour more on average than their less accomplished peers. Or that they took naps and long breaks. This is how we've come to believe that world-class performance comes after 10,000 hours of practice, but that's wrong. In fact, he goes on, he says it comes after 10,000 hours of deliberate practice, 12,500 hours of deliberate rest, and 30,000 hours of sleep. So get this, 42,500 hours of deliberate rest and sleep is part of what makes us exceptional. It's crazy. Because when we make margin, life is better, and we become so much better. We become exceptional at life. So what is margin? How do we define margin? Well, here's the definition of margin that I want us to use. I want us to think of margin this way. Margin is the difference between what you have and what you need. All right, and so think, for instance, if you are driving somewhere, and it's going to take you 25 minutes to get to that destination, but you have 35 minutes to get there before you need to be there. You have a margin of 10 minutes. All right, or think, for instance, about a book. You know, when you open up that book, you know, you see what in the middle of the page? You see text, right? All around the outside of that page is what? The margin, right? The white space. And so, you know, there's a reason they don't take text all the way to the end of the page. Have you ever seen a book like that? you wouldn't want to read it. In fact, we put a screen together with our last quote. Here's what it looked like. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't even, didn't even know where to focus up there. In fact, the computer wouldn't even let us do that. We had to do an end run around that because the computer automatically makes margin. And so, you know, think about, you know, when you merge onto Interstate 69 on your way to work in the morning. You know, you want to see margin. You want to see extra pavement, right? That's a good thing. I mean, you don't want to merge into a lane where there's 3 inches on either side. You want like 3 feet on each side of you. In fact, some of you, if I'm driving next year, want 6 feet on either side of me. And so we like margin, or when we travel, if you fly regularly, whenever you get the option of upgrading to first class, you're like, I'll take it. Why do you take the first class upgrade? It's because you want extra space. You want more space than you need because we like extra margin. See, we do this really well when it comes to physical things, right? You know, we create margin really well. But when it comes to maybe the more important things, like our finances, our relationships, the things that matter the most to us, you know, we're going to look at personal or integrity margin in a few weeks. I mean, we really struggle. We constantly go right up to the edge. And one of the things that I've been discovering every year that I'm off for this, you know, month, and I'm getting better at it, though I don't do well at it, is that margin is where some of the best things in life happen. In fact, take a look at this video. This is a really cool look at the importance of making space right here.
And the paper shuffling, marathon meetings, coffee to go, juggling, road raging and commuting while catching your breath. But it's the beginning of life, because I am home. Make room for a new beginning, a new linen for a new tenant. It might be the start of a new beautiful friendship. Make room for family and for your friends, for those who let you down but might just be there in the end. Make room for wins and losses, for bosses and their never-ending stories about the office. Make room for the first time and the last time, the ones in between and the past time. Make room for one more, for dance floor, and make sure you make room for whatever it is that you stand for. Make room for love, make room for loss, for the things you cherish, whatever the cost. Make sure you make room for life.
How about IKEA right there? That's an IKEA commercial saying, make room for life. How about IKEA? Let's go for IKEA saying, we need room for life. I love IKEA. Yeah, you know, we have to make room. If we don't make room, nobody will make it. Well, I want us to look at Luke chapter 10 today. We find this classic picture of Jesus explaining the importance of this in our lives. And you can follow along on the screens, or if you want to, you know, read it in front of you, you can go to the Crosspoint app and hit this week, and there's a verse for this week, and it'll take you right to the story. And in this story, we find, you know, two women, two different women, and in one woman in the story, she felt like she had margin. The other one created margin, and it said of her that she got something that can't be taken away from her. And so here's Jesus. This is Jesus, a story of these two women and Jesus in Luke chapter 10. This is one of the authorized biographies of Jesus' life right here. So as they continued their travel, Jesus entered a village. A woman by the name of Martha welcomed him and made him feel quite at home. He had a sister Mary who sat before the master, hanging on every word he said. But Martha was, and what does that next two words say? Pulled away. I want you to get an image in your mind. I want you to picture somebody just being pulled away. I mean, just being pulled away. And what does it say she was pulled away by? What you and I are pulled away by. All that she had to do. And so what's interesting is we have two different women who have this exact same opportunity right here, but Mary creates a moment. She creates an exceptional moment right here. And this doesn't mean she didn't have emails to respond to. It didn't mean she didn't have, you know, a presentation to give the next day that she had to put some finishing touches on. It doesn't mean she didn't have, like, patient, you know, dictation to record from the day. I don't know what she did or what her life looked like, but she probably had things on her plate. But it says in that moment, she said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to create some white space, some margin, and embrace this moment because Jesus is here. Right? And Jesus says, this is something that won't be taken away from her. And Martha, on the other hand, like so many of us, it says she's distracted and she's pulled. She's just drug away by all that she had to do. And it's interesting because, you know, oftentimes we think the things that drag us away are sinful things or bad things. No, it was probably good things. She's actually distracted by some very good things, like preparation. I mean, Jesus is in the house, right? I mean, Jesus, apparently everybody's beginning to believe Jesus is the Son of God right here. She's not sure, but she believes that. She's like, I got to get the good plates out. I got to get the good china out of the cabinet. Hey, anybody have good china growing up that only came out when guests came over? It's a fascinating idea. I don't know why we do that. Nonetheless, she's like, I need to fill the toilet paper roll. What if the Son of God has to take a dump? I mean, that'd be a very bad thing if he didn't have toilet paper. I mean, good things that she's trying to take care of, and yet she's distracted by these good things, and they actually keep her from the best thing. In fact, I heard it said one time that if Satan, you know, this intelligent darkness, can't make you bad, then he'll just make you busy. Because busyness takes us away from the things that matter most. A number of years ago, when we first started Crosspoint, we just moved into our house here in Fishers, and we had a 2 and 4 year old at the time. We're getting ready to add our third child, who's Maggie, and we were about a month out from her due date, and we moved into our home here in Fishers. We were 2 months out from our first preview service here at Crosspoint. So I mean, it was a crazy, crazy time in our lives. I was the only paid staff at Crosspoint. We didn't even have a church. I mean, we were just getting ready to launch, and Julie and I were burning the candle at both ends most nights. And I just remember being pressed all the time. That song, that Menendez song, I mean, that was my life at that point. And so I remember a bright, sunny November afternoon, just, you know, within a few weeks after we got into our house, I was out pushing my oldest daughter, Macy, on the swing. And I'm pushing her, and then I had to step in. An email dinged in that I knew was coming. I had to respond to some things. And I came back out a few minutes later, and she's sitting there in the swing with her head down. And I said, Macy, you okay? And she looked up, and I said, you doing okay? She said, yeah, I'm fine. And it was one of those moments where I wasn't convinced. And so I said, do you want to swing anymore? She said, no. And it's just one of those moments where you felt like she had more to say, and yet you didn't know exactly what was going on. And then, you know, after a moment of waiting, she said, I don't think I like our new house. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, what is it that you don't like about our new house? Do you not like our yard? Or you not like your room? Or does it not feel like home yet? And she says, no. I'm like, well, you know, what is it, honey? And again, she just sat there. After a couple moments, she said, you know, Dad, when we lived at our old house, when you came out to play, you really played. But since we moved into our new house, every time you come to play, you're only here for a moment and then you leave again. I'm like, oh, as a dad, I mean, that's like a killer right there, right? But see, I realized in that moment, and I've struggled with it really ever since, I struggle with margin. I struggle making space for some of the most important things in life. And it's fascinating because, you know, I know the right things to do. I know the life-giving things to do. I get that. But I'm in the tension that probably many of us feel every single day, where I'm trying to constantly figure out how to be effective with what God has wired me to do and called me to do, and at the same time, how to make sure I make space for some of the most significant things in life. And this is one of the reasons I'm so thankful that the board requires me to take 4 weeks off every summer. I mean, because it allows us to disconnect as a family from the normal rhythms of ministry. I mean, they care that much about our relational and emotional and spiritual health. It's forced margin. And I can say, man, when I make margin, life is better. Because margin is where some of the best things in life happen. Over this past month, we traveled a few different places, you know, while we were off. And for part of the time, we spent out in California. We ended up out at Yosemite National Park, which is just beautiful. Man, holy cow, never been there before. And we spent 4 days camping in the Yosemite Valley. And we'd never done this before. We're not real big planners. And so we plan like when we know where we want to go. And so most people plan to go to the Yosemite Valley like a year ahead. We're not like a year ahead planners. And so about a month out, we're deciding to look for some lodging. And so everything's booked up, and then all of a sudden, every now and then, something would, you know, come available, and so we started snagging these reservations at this place called the Housekeeping Camp. Now, the Housekeeping Camp is this campground down in the Yosemite Valley. In fact, here's an image of the housekeeping tent. It's kind of like a three-sided concrete structure with a tent front, like a shower. Picture a shower curtain that you close. You close your door with a shower curtain, all right? That's all you got. And there's bears there, by the way, black bears. So we had a bear box that we would put all our food in because, you know, you actually get fined if you keep any food in your campsite because you will have a bear with you before the morning, you know, comes. Cosmetics, anything with a cinch, you have to put in the bear box. And so, and then it's got a tent over the top. And there's like 500 of these in the Yosemite Valley housekeeping camp. So nonetheless, we get there. We're being set up camp. And our kids, we've never camped with our kids, we discovered. Julie and I used to camp. We've never camped with our kids. So they're like, yeah, we're not thinking this is a good idea, Mom and Dad. We don't feel real safe right here. And so, you know, as we're setting camp up, we're like, it's fine. It's like a Friday night. I mean, people are drinking and groups of people are karaokeing in the campground. They're doing this Alvin and the Chipmunk thing. Somebody would be like, Alvin. And 20 people in the campground would be like, Alvin. You know, I mean, the kids are not, you know, they're just not into this. So it's dark. The campfire is going. And our son, he has this great line. It kind of captures the whole trip. He comes out and he says, really, Mom and Dad? Really? You thought this would be a great first camping experience for us? So, I mean, our best plans, you know, are starting to unravel. And so we send them to bed, which they had a hard time getting to bed. Every sound they heard, they're like, is that you? Is that a bear? You know, and they're freaking out, the bears. And Julie and I are out at the fire. I'm like, man, what do we do? Do we bail early and go back to San Francisco a couple days early? Do we see this through? And so we decide, hey, we're just going to see this through the next day. And so we, you know, get up the next morning. One of my favorite moments of camp, we're cooking eggs and potatoes and bacon over the fire. I mean, oh, it just doesn't get any better than that. And the kids just begin to find rhythm with the margin that we have. And those 4 days were some of the best. We ended up staying the whole 4 days. Were some of the best that we had all summer. I mean, we were hiking beneath, you know, the Half Dome. We went to the top of Glacier Point and we got photos. Look at that. Is that, I mean, you're just seeing things that, you know, it's like we're taking it all in. We're, you know, rafting down the Merced River through the Yosemite Valley. And I tell you what, some of the things that happened around the campfire in the evenings, and we were laughing. Our kids played spoons. They made spoons out of sticks because we didn't have any spoons, and we played spoons every night together around the campfire. I mean, just you know, exceptional moments as a family happened when we took margin. We created space. And yet we so often, so many of us, myself included, we become obsessed with the urgent, obsessed with what we think is important, and we miss some of the most important moments in life. This is Mary and Martha. I mean, it's so funny. You know, look at what happens in this story right here. All right, it says, verse 40, later she stepped in, interrupting them. This is Martha saying, Master, don't you care about my... It's like my best distressed woman in distress voice. Don't you care that my sister has abandoned me to the kitchen all by myself? Tell her to give me a hand. She's like, tell her to give me a hand. She's like, seriously, Jesus? Now this is funny if this isn't landing with you right now, but for most of us, we're kind of like, yeah, I always get pulled away by things that aren't that important. And so what's interesting about this is Martha absolutely believed that what she was doing was the most important thing. She's like, I'm doing the most important thing. She's like, I'm prepping for everything. I'm making sure the toilet roll's filled for you. I mean, all these things. She's like, Jesus, take my side. My sister's just sitting there being lazy, talking to you. And see, here's possibly the greatest challenge over these next 4 weeks for most of us, right? In terms of God, what God might want to do in our lives. See, most of us are like Martha. We think all the stuff we keep cramming into our life, all the activity we've got going on, all the kids' sports and activities and that elusive scholarship we're going after, we think that's all the right thing. We're convinced that that's what has to happen in order for us or our kids to be successful because everybody's doing it. And yet Jesus, again, he's very countercultural. Here's what he says in Matthew 7. He says, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. But many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and only a few will find it. See, God's best is rarely the road that everybody's going on. And so as we dig into these next 3 weeks, this is going to rock some of our worlds. And today I'm really just kind of setting up the value of margin. Next week we're going to look at financial margin, which is how to have more month or more money left at the end of your month. All right. And then in 2 weeks from today, we're going to look at how to make space to invest our lives in the things that matter most. And then week 4, we're going to look at the importance of integrity margin or personal margin, how to protect our relationships and our sexuality by creating boundaries and margins so we're not always going right up, you know, to the line. And for some of us, these 4 weeks are really going to rock our worlds. I mean, the Spirit's really going to do some amazing things, I believe, inside of us. And yet for many of us, we're probably just going to walk off and shake it off. We're going to walk out and be like, yeah, that's good. I need to make a couple minor changes. Well, here's the thing about minor changes. If they were minor, you would have already made them. See, I think some of us, we need the Holy Spirit to be able to really begin to create some new traction and some new growth in our lives. Jesus goes on, verse 42. The master said, Dear Martha, you're fussing far too much and getting yourself worked up over, what's the word he uses right there? Nothing. He says, one thing only is essential, and Mary has, and look at these two words right there, chosen it. So this is a choice. He says, it's the main course, and it won't be taken away from her. So she had to choose it. Now, most of us, again, you're going to push back during this series because you're going to be like, well, Kurt, you don't understand my life. I don't get to choose. I don't, you know, and you're going to be like, and by the way, you just spent like 4 weeks off. You don't know what it's like to be in the throes of work again. And by the way, you only work like one day a week that we see. And so, like, you don't get my life, right? I mean, you know what it's like to be, you know, the leader of a publicly traded company? Really? That's kind of like what the church is. You don't know what it's like to, you know, be evaluated like every time you're in front of people and people are like grading you. Do you want to step in my shoes every week? A few people that do that every week. I mean, you know, the choice is yours. Well, you don't know my boss, Kurt. You don't know the demands of my boss. No. Jesus says, hey, Mary chose it. See, margin is a choice. And he says, when you choose this, it's something that won't be taken away from you. So five things. While I was off of the last 4 weeks, five discoveries, five realities that I'm continuing to come to. And these are five things I wrote down, some of my learnings as I was flying back from a trip last week. And so these went in my digital journal. And I thought, well, I just want to share them with you. You may know all of these, but these are the benefits of margin right here. So five things. Number one, margin decreases stress. That's one of the things I've learned over and over. When margin increases, stress decreases. It's amazing. I mean, again, if you've got 15 minutes to get somewhere and it only takes 10 to get there, you've got 5 minutes of margin. You have a low amount of stress. If you're late, you're going, oh my gosh, whoa, we're going to be late. They're going to be mad. And your stress goes off the charts because when margin decreases, stress increases. Second thing, margin fuels intimacy. See, as your margin decreases down, your relational intimacy decreases. See, when we're always problem solving, when we're always tethered to work, when we're always tethered to the things that we think are most important and we've got to fill our lives with, guess what happens? You can be with the people you love and not really there. You can be on vacation even, but if you're tethered to your work, you're not really on vacation. And so our relational intimacy decreases as our margin decreases, but not only with people, get this, also with God. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I run into people in the community, you know, out at Kroger or, you know, kids' sporting events or school events. And it's somebody I haven't seen for a while. I'm doing a lot of that right now. Man, I haven't seen you in like 4 weeks. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm the one that's been gone. And so, but usually I'm like, I haven't seen you in a while. And usually the response, they'll go something like, oh yeah, I mean, man, we've been bad. We haven't been in church in a few weeks. I'm like, oh, well, I didn't even know that, by the way. I don't know those things when I talk to you usually because we don't keep like a cosmic clipboard of your attendance, right? But usually, you know, and then it's funny because then the next weekend they'll come up to Connection Point. And they're like, hey, we're here. I'm like, great. I mean, that's not the point of the conversation, but we're always glad you're here. But nonetheless, usually in the midst of that conversation, the conversation will go like this. They'll go, yeah, we just got really, really busy. Yeah, busy. Because it pulls us away. Pulls us away. So when our margin decreases, our relational capacity decreases with people and with God. Third thing, margin fosters clarity and creativity. Have you ever tried to get clarity in the pressure cooker of life? It's very, very hard. Have you ever tried to be creative under pressure? It's very, very hard. See, when you get margin, those things begin to expand. But we have to have white space. We have to have the margin to do it. Number four, margin is where the exceptional happens. It's where the most important relationships get fostered. It's where the things that bring life and energy happen. The exceptional moments, they actually happen in the white space, in the margin of our lives. Number five, probably the one that's most helpful for me that I've got to continue to remember, is margin disconnects my identity from what I can produce. Because I don't know about you, but I have this innate just ability, I guess you would call it, to connect what I produce to my identity. Even though I know I shouldn't, but I'm constantly kind of saying, well, I was very productive today, so that made me a good employee today. Or I was very productive, so that makes me a good dad. And see, what's interesting is the less and less margin I have in my life, I've noticed the less and less I trust that God has my best interest in mind. It's fascinating how this works. It's like I have these moments where I just add more and do more. I have to think I have to be producing more because I'm going after some elusive something. I don't even know what it is sometimes. I've got to work harder. I've got to produce more, make more money. Right, we have our kids in more things, more activities. You're going after that elusive, you know, scholarship, whatever it is. I mean, think about this. Most of us, this is fascinating. Most of us make more money today than we've ever made in our entire life. And yet, we battle more stress than we've ever had in our life. Most of us, we're in positions where we have more influence and can do greater things than we've ever been able to do in our life up to this point. And yet, we're more empty and exhausted than we've ever been. Why is that? It's because we're chasing that elusive thing that we think is going to matter. But we're filling our lives with, as Jesus said, with things that don't really matter. I don't know if you know this or not, but God dreams dreams for you that are better than the dreams that you dream for yourself. Think about that for a moment. God, you have a creator who has dreams for your life, and they're dreams that are better. We think we have to keep adding and producing, and God says, no, I got better dreams than what you think you can create. He says it over and over in the Bible. Take a look at Isaiah 4. It says, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. I don't know about you, but that's a better dream than I have for my life right there. He goes on, he says, they will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. So margin isn't just where we go and get filled with creativity and re-energized and have life and space for life. Margin is also a place where we find relief, and that may be what some of us need this week. So here's what I want us to do this week. Here's the one next step I really want to encourage you to take. There's three or four in the back of your connection card from returning next weekend, which we always get excited about, or you know, maybe you want to take a step of faith. Maybe for some of you today is your day, and that's awesome. But I want to simply ask you to do one thing this week. All right, one thing, I want to ask you to take one step in favor of margin this week, all right, which shouldn't be work, all right, which means I don't want you coming up with a whole strategy. Some of you are like, oh, here's all the things I'm going to do. Don't do a strategy. You don't have time or energy for that, all right? You're wiped out, right? A strategy you won't complete. Just figure out one thing. What's one thing you can do in favor of margin this week and repeat it every day? It could be, you know, engaging in a hobby you love or taking a nap or creating some quiet space or playing the guitar again or shooting hoops if you like to do that, shooting skeet, you know, collecting stamps. I don't know. Don't collect stamps, by the way. I don't know that that's very energizing. But whatever it is you like to do, just what's one thing you can do this week that will actually move you toward margin? And as you think about that, see, here's what happens. When you make the decision in favor of margin, you know what you're doing? You're actually taking a step in the direction of God. You're actually saying, God, you know, if you say this is how life works, I guess I want to take a step toward that. And guess what? God doesn't go, well, you're going to figure out how to do that on your own. You have to work your way up toward that. No, God says, you know what? The moment you take that step, the moment you say, here's what I'm going to do when you start it, his spirit begins to fuel it. It's in that moment, his spirit comes, and it's like a snowball going down a hill. It starts small, and it begins to grow. And you're going to find that that begins to produce space in your life. So what's that one thing this week that you can move toward in favor of margin? You know, as we were hiking down Glacier Point 3 weeks ago, start at the top, and it's a five-mile trip down the mountain. And so all of our kids had a water bottle. We all had water bottles. And I had a backpack that had extra water and extra food and all these things. And, you know, and I'm carrying this thing. And it's pretty heavy. I mean, we're about the first mile. All I could really think about is, oh, gosh, I got 4.5 more miles. And I wasn't really taking it. My kids are talking about how beautiful it is. My wife's like, oh, this view I could just live with my whole life, the rest of my life. I mean, they're soaking this in. All I'm focused on now is this backpack that's digging into my shoulders. My legs are burning. I'm wanting to make sure I don't, you know, take mixed steps on the rocks and that I don't get injured, you know, and all this stuff. And then we stop about a mile in and we, you know, take some water and the kids eat some snacks and we take some of the water bottles out of my bag and refill theirs. And all of a sudden my bag is getting lighter. We do that again another half mile down the trail. And I experienced something really interesting as we continued, and now we're about halfway down. My bag has gotten lighter, and all of a sudden, I begin to see things that I wasn't seeing. In fact, I begin to see, for the first time, I noticed the Yosemite Valley, stopped to take a picture of it. I mean, that was at one of the switchbacks. I mean, it's beautiful. But see, I was missing it because I was so focused by about what was on my shoulders. And see, I think this is a lot. This really symbolizes how God works in our lives. So I want to walk us through and create a little white space as we close this morning. I want to ask you to close your eyes. If you can bow your heads if you want. I want you, our imagination is very powerful. I want you to just imagine this in your mind right now as you sit here. I want you to imagine you're on a path. You're heading up a mountain. And you're carrying a backpack. You got that backpack on your back, and it's weighing you down. And all the weights in that bag are the worries and the burdens that you carry every single day. Each one of them is like a stone, and every stone has a name on it, has a word. It might be family. It might be work. It might be bills. It might be major if you're in college, because you have no idea what you're going to major in. And as you continue down that path, your back begins to feel the weight of it. Before long, those straps on that backpack are beginning to dig into your shoulders. And your legs are burning, and you can't stop. You got to keep going. And as you're climbing, all of a sudden, you become aware that someone's walking next to you. It's a calming, kind of peaceful presence. In fact, it almost feels like somebody who's known you and loved you your whole life. Without even looking over, you know that's the presence of Jesus. You're not alone. He's actually right there beside you. In fact, he comes up, he puts his hand on your shoulder. He says, hey, why don't we take a break here for a moment? Let's sit down over here on these rocks. And as you sit down, he helps you take that pack off, and you lay it at your feet. And he asks one question. He says, hey, what's in that bag? What are you carrying? And you reach into that bag, and I just want you to imagine reaching into your bag and pulling out whatever's on top. I want you to think, what does that rock say? And you begin to explain it to him. And you fumble through some words, and you get a description out, and it says, okay, how about this? Would you mind if I take that rock? You mind if I just carry that from here on out? And you're like, really? You'd actually do that? He's like, yeah. He says, and what else do you have in that bag? And you reach all the way to the bottom of the bag, and you take out the big one on the bottom. It's been there a long time. And you pull it out, and you read that word. And he says, do you mind if I carry that one too? You're like, really? You do that? In fact, he says, actually, do you mind if I just take the whole bag? Do you mind if I take the whole bag from here? And as he takes that bag, he does it with a smile on his face. And the straps on the bag on his shoulders, and he stands up, and it's interesting because, see, the weight of that bag doesn't weigh him down the way it weighs your life down. And then he reaches down, and he reaches out his hand. He says, come on, let's go. And you stand up, and your back feels better, and your legs, man, they've got like a renewed power and energy in them. And you start walking down behind that path, right behind him. And this is the same path you were on just a few moments before, and yet it's different now. It looks different. You're seeing things you've never seen. You're hearing the whisper of the wind through the pine needles. Seeing the beauty of the valley. And in fact, he says, hey, look way out there. Look, way out. See that valley out there? That's where we're going. That lush green valley, that's the valley of life. That's where we're headed. Come on. Father, for some of us this morning, we've been so filling our lives with stuff, activity, things that we think we have to do in order to have a productive life. And we live as if you don't care about our lives. Yet we need to lean into the idea that you dream bigger dreams for us than we often dream for ourselves. And Father, this week, whatever those rocks are that came to our mind, we want to just leave those in your hands today. Doesn't mean they're not important. Doesn't mean that those things don't need to take place in our lives. It just means that we don't have to go after it alone, that you actually carry the weight of that, and we can allow your energy and your spirit to work. But it comes when we put our hand in yours and we follow. And when we do that, life is so much better, and we're so much better at life. And so, Father, I just pray that you help us know what to do with what we've been processing here today. It's probably different for every single one of us. Help us to lean into that margin this week, whatever that one thing is we've identified we can do. And Father, I just pray that you would bring a life this week and that your spirit would be free to move within and through so that we could have some rest.